Hello, everyone, and welcome to another amazing night of Fandemexus Week in Review. I am your ever faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations. So, very short show tonight. Walking Dead, Manifest. That's it. And next week, however, we're going to add another show as Westworld premieres on this Sunday. So we'll have that to talk about next week. And as soon as Karen gets here, we'll jump right in. So what else have I been watching that I can babble about for a minute? Never mind. Here she is.
Hello, AJ. How are you?
Good evening. I am well. How are you?
I'm great. I got a big piece of work off my desk today, and I'm feeling really good.
That's always good.
Yep. We got a really short show tonight, huh?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So, two shows, right? We've got The Walking Dead was on this week, and Manifest, and I guess that's it?
That's it. That's all she wrote.
Okay. All right, so without Jamie here, maybe I'll just give my really quick little summary of The Walking Dead.
Go for it.
Which was a pretty good episode. So, you know, I know you're not watching the show, but where we are in the comics right now, we are nearing the climax of the Whisperer War. And so this week was sort of like one of these, it's an episode that didn't really need to happen because so it was like over an hour, right? Like Walking Dead runs like an hour and like 8 minutes or something every week. And this was one of those episodes where everyone was sort of like having these moments where they're almost like saying goodbye to each other because they're setting you up because you don't really know who's going to live through the war, right? So we had all these like touching moments. And some of them were really great. And some of them were like, you know, is there any person in America who believes that Daryl Dixon could possibly die in The Walking Dead? No, there's no way. He's the main character who will remain on the show forever. So, but there were some nice touching moments. Some of them were tear-jerkery and yet really well done so that you really fell for them. And then some of them were a little, less good, but it was mostly good. It was mostly set up. We finally saw Negan in his skin mask this week for the first time. And they later talked about it on Talking Dead later. So Norman Reedus and who's the special effects guy? Greg Nicotero were the guests on Talking Dead. And they talked about how when Jeffrey Dean Morgan was helping them sort of design what Negan's mask should look like, he wanted the mouth to be, you know, the Heath Ledger Joker has that mouth that sort of like cut on the two sides. So that's what Negan's mouth looks like in his Whisperer mask. It's kind of cool. So it's kind of funny the way they're doing this. So Negan, I mean, I think most viewers of the show are skeptical now, like has Negan really joined the Walkers or is Negan sort of like, undercover, is he gonna maybe kill Alpha and try to save everyone? I would say that the way the show is going now, if that is true, it's hard to see what Negan's endgame is. Now I know what happens in the comics, and I won't spoil that. But in this week's episode, Alpha has brought her horde to the walls of Hilltop, and in the last like 5 minutes of the episode, the battle for Hilltop begins. It was kind of surprising to me, without spoiling anything. This is like the timeline of the Whisperer War is off, right? AJ, you know how this goes. So, in this episode, Negan says to Alpha, it was a little bit of Game of Thrones. Cause he says to Alpha, like, don't kill everyone. Wouldn't it be cooler to make them bend the knee? He doesn't say those exact words, but he's basically like, make them bend the knee. That'd be so much more satisfying. And Alpha's like, oh yeah, you're right. We'll have them bend the knee. And then they get to Hilltop, and she basically has this, they actually were shooting fire They had drained a bunch of tree sap out of pine trees, Beta did, which apparently is very flammable, and they were basically shooting, like, boiling oil at Hilltop, and everything's on fire. And Negan says, hey, I thought you were going to, like, make them bend the knee, make them join us. And Alpha says, oh, yeah, they will join us as members of my horde. So her plan is to wipe them all out and make them zombies. And so the episode ends with, like, the battle at the walls of Hilltop, and everyone's fighting, and it turns around the timeline of the Whisperers in the comic books. You know, if you've read it, you know Alpha's actions and Negan's actions and how the communities, both Hilltop and Alexandria, are involved in this, right? So they've messed with that a little bit. I'm a little hard-pressed to see how assisting Alpha in bringing her 10,000 zombie horde to the walls of Hilltop is somehow Negan. If you believe that Negan is actually a double agent trying to help Alexandria, it is hard to see how assisting Alpha in bringing her horde to the gate is part of that, right? Like, what's your end game here, Negan? So we'll see about that. I think there are some characters who clearly, I think this episode clearly set it up for, I think Ezekiel's going to die next week. So Ezekiel has cancer in this version of Walking Dead, and he's got a giant tumor. He has, like, it looks like a goiter on his throat. He's got, like, thyroid cancer, and he's got, like, a big like, golf ball-sized tumor sticking out of his neck. He's been wearing, like, a kerchief around his neck for weeks. And so this week it was revealed to both Carol and Daryl that he's basically dying of cancer. Carol and Ezekiel have sex. So come on, it's totally goodbye sex. He's totally going to die. Oh, not only does he have sex with Carol, but Daryl comes to Ezekiel and says, listen, make me a deal. If one of us dies, the other one saves the kids. Because, like, Judith, like, for some reason, every single kid has been moved to Hilltop. So they make this deal. If someone dies, the other one has to save the kids. So while I don't think that Daryl will die, I do believe that Ezekiel will die next week saving the children. He's going to die anyway. He has cancer. He's an easy major character. They're going to kill him one way or the other, right?
I definitely think that is a distinct possibility. Otherwise, throwaway line that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Like, if anything happens to me, and then Daryl has a conversation with Judith where he says, Judith, listen to me. If Ezekiel comes, you got to do what he says. I don't care if you don't know where I am. Just do what he says. And Judith says, but I want to fight. And he's like, no, you go with Ezekiel. So we can kind of see where this is going, because next week's promo is Ezekiel saying, guess what he's saying? Guess what Ezekiel's saying in next week's promo? Where's Judith? Because
no
idea. The Grimes children can never be found in a time of crisis.
Yeah.
It's the new Where's Carl? It's going to be Where's Judith? So I think having sex with Carol and then saying, yes, I agree to save the children, I think, and having cancer, I think he's totally going to die in an effort to save the children. So we'll see where that goes. There's also a setup. Eugene has been having secret radio conversations with a woman named Stephanie for a couple episodes now. And he...
I know where that's going.
Right?
You do too.
Yeah, yeah. And so Stephanie is like, so Eugene's like in love with the voice on Stephanie, and he's like, oh, let's meet. And she's like, I got to ask my people, but don't you tell your people, Eugene. Like, he's been keeping it a secret. The way the show is setting it up, there's a good chance he's being catfished. We saw this happen on Fear the Walking Dead, where Alicia was on the boat. Remember in season one or two when you still watch the show, Alicia's talking on the radio to some guys who turn out to be pirates. Eugene actually is over Rosita and totally into this woman, Stephanie. And in this episode, he agreed to meet her. So I guess they're setting up the next, well, you and I know what's going on, and they're setting that up for, I guess, next season. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've recapped it a little too much. Overall, it was a pretty decent episode. It was a little heavy on the biggest tearjerker moment is, so you know how Daryl has these two wings on the back of his biker vest? And, like, in his big fight with Alpha last week, one of them got, like, ripped off. And so this week, Judith says, I made you a present. Daryl, and she has painted. She's like a little artist. She paints a lot on the show. And she has repainted the right-hand side wing in blue paint with stars on it. And so he now has this, like, his vest is, like, the white on one side and this blue, this brand-new blue wing paint on the other side that Judith painted for him, which is a very tear-jerkery moment. Tear-jerky? Not jerkery. Whatever. It's a very emotional moment. It's actually really well done. So
it sounded good to me.
It sounds a little cheesy maybe, but it was actually really well done. That little girl who plays Judith is kind of charismatic on screen. And she's good with Rita's. Rita's plays really well against this child, I think. And he's really good, like, you know, he talks to her parent kind of just like a friend, you know, and it was a really nice little scene. And so, of course, I'm sure AMC will be selling that T-shirt. I think they already are selling that T-shirt, actually.
That
was a nice moment. Yeah.
Does Daryl refer to her as Judith, or does he go around calling her little ass kicker?
He calls her Judith. He calls her Judith, at least to her face. We haven't heard him call her ass kicker in a while.
They missed an opportunity there.
Yep. Michonne has not been seen in weeks. Danai Gurira has not been on the show. Well, we know that Danai Gurira only committed to do a certain number of episodes this season as she transitions off the show. So she was not in this week. I think it was a decent episode. I think it was fairly solid episode. They had a lot of fire effects. I did not like whoever directed this shot it with a lot of slow-mo at the end. Daryl has a new weapon. He did not fight with his bow and arrow. He fought with a Morning Star, which is like a spiked ball on the end of a chain that you like spin around and hit people with, which is good for close combat, right? He can't use the bow and arrow in close combat.
Yeah.
And it was kind of cool. There was a lot of sort of slow-mo of people like slamming zombie heads and blood splattering everywhere. It was fine. I personally don't love slow-mo either in film or television. I find it a little maybe overdone and lazy sometimes. But it was cool to see everybody. It was a decent episode. I mean, it's just a more solid season, right? And so it was pretty good. But I'm not 100%. Look, I know they're going to mess with the comic and do things differently. I know where the Whisper storyline is going. I'm not 100% behind the way they're playing it out, and I wonder what they're going to do differently. We all know that Alpha has to die in order for this chapter to end and things to move on, and the question is, Carol really wants to kill her, and in this week's episode, she and Lydia have a conversation, and Lydia's like, look, you can kill my mother, but it's not going to change anything, and Carol goes, yeah, but it'll feel good. So the question is, does Carol get to kill her? Does Lydia get to kill her? Does Negan get to kill her? I think Negan kills her, regardless of what happens in the comic book. There's no way you keep Negan on this television show without some redemptive act. He can never be fully redeemed. He killed Glenn. But I think the show Negan needs to kill Alpha in order to stay on this show. Comic book Negan, I know what happens to him. Between Carol and Negan, I'd say they need to let Negan kill him and redeem himself, and they need Carol to come back from this very hateful and vengeful, like, brink that she's standing on. And if she kill, like, I think where the show is going is that Carol doesn't kill Alpha, and that's how Carol, like, comes back to, although there's 3 weeks from now that the episode is titled Look at the Flowers. So who knows, Carol will kill in that episode.
Oh boy, maybe Carol's gonna die.
Yeah.
They're gonna twist it on everybody.
Yeah, I don't think Carol will die. I think, you know, there's only two characters left from season one, Daryl and Carol, right? Both actors have repeatedly said they want to stay on the show. So I mean, technically, Judith was conceived in season one, so I guess technically she was around in season one.
Mm-hmm.
But Daryl and Carol are the only season one characters, and, you know, they're the male and female lead right now, and neither actor has shown any interest in leaving the program. So I think if we were to take this to where the comic ends, there could only be a couple seasons left, right? And both those characters maybe need to, if they need to fulfill the Rick and Michonne roles.
Well, I mean, if you're wrapping up the Whispers, then
yeah, there's like
two
more arcs
left. You could probably do two seasons, maybe stretch it out to three, but that's it.
And then you're out of material. Yeah.
Plus, they haven't been using the material anyway, so.
No, they haven't. So related to Walking Dead, I know that Jamie mentioned, Jamie has screeners for the new series, which is, what is it called? The new Walking Dead series is called, what's it called? The World Beyond?
Yeah.
No, that's one of the chapters of the Walking Dead spinoff is called
World Beyond.
Yeah, World Beyond. And it's kids. It's like all kids who have been like born and raised in the apocalypse and don't really remember like a normal civilized world or whatever. It premieres, I don't know when, in a couple weeks, I guess. And Jamie is watching some screeners, and so I guess maybe next week she will have some teasers for us on what's going to happen. Maybe. April 12th. It doesn't premiere till April 12th. So maybe we'll, I don't know, learn something from Jamie when she, I don't know how much time, how many weeks of screeners she got or how much work she has to do and how much time she has to devote to it, but she said next week, I guess, she'll give us a little bit of a preview. And that's, I guess, all there is that needs to be said this week about this show. So, any questions about it?
Nope.
No? Want to move on? Okay.
Please.
All right. I've done a lot of talking. Why don't you give us a little idea what you think about this week's episode of Manifest?
I might be done with it.
Shut up. Really?
It kind of hooked me back in at the end. But
yeah,
this whole thing with I'm confused. And it's not a good confused. You know, we've watched shows, Mr. Robot, Orphan Black, shows like that where we were like, I have no idea what's going on. I'm so confused, but I love it. Show is making my head hurt. And this episode really just hurt so much. So the captain and what's his face there, Jared.
Yeah.
You know, Jared's like, why is IAD here? And she's like, listen, I got it undercover. You know, she's like, I had to do it. Otherwise, Michaela was going to do it herself, and that would have made things worse. I can pull the plug at any time. We just had to play this out. And I'm like, okay, the captain's in on the undercover, but that's stupid. You gotta bring Michaela into it because this is stupid otherwise. And then they start, IAD starts grilling Michaela, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, this is so bogus. I was like, you don't come in, you know, like these writers need to do some research on how this shit works. Like, it doesn't work that way. And then you see the captain and Jared again, and they're like, you better, the captain's like, you need to talk to Simon, you know, and Jared, you know, and I'm like, whoa, Simon? I was like, wait a minute, holy crap, what's going on here? I was like, is Jared undercover and the captain's an Xer? Or does she understand, like, is it undercover? Like, what the hell is going on here? So Jared goes to you know, Simon, they have their conversation, everything. And then he comes back, and then he sees the union rep who he's seen at one of the Xer conventions, and that's when he deduces, holy shit, Michaela isn't even going to make it to the interview downtown. They're going to kill her on the way.
Yeah.
That's, you know, like Simon's whole plan. So, you know, Jared saves her. And I know Jared doesn't want anything bad to happen to Michaela, regardless if he's a real ex or not. But I am so, it's so confusing. Because, like, the way he acts with the exes, it totally, everything screams undercover. But this episode, so many moving parts with this one storyline that contradict each other, and nobody's acting correctly in the situation that how, like, it's almost like they just wrote a bunch of shit and threw it together. Like, it's so bad. And I gotta give the actors a bunch of credit for what they were given. They did actually really good job with those scenes, but the writing on it was absolutely awful. It's the land of make-believe. We're supposed to, you know, have some kind of reality to this. Even though, you know, it's a science fiction show, but you still have to base certain things in reality. Reality things are reality things based on your rules. they do not know how to write police at all. They never have. Since the show started, the cop stuff has always been really bad. This just was awful. What do you think?
Well, so I don't, I didn't hate it as much as you did. I thought there was some okay stuff going on this week and some bad stuff. So I agree with you that the Jared storyline is becoming overly convoluted and unnecessary, right? Like, I still think he's undercover. I was equally confused as you were. At the end of last week, it appeared that Jared was, like, officially undercover with his captain in on it. This week, like, I also was like, wait, is the captain an Xer? Is Jared an Xer and the captain? Is the captain an Xer and Jared's, like, not, like, what? Like, I couldn't get it. I think the conspiracy is a little too – I agree with you also that when the IA people came in to speak to Michaela, the way they aggressively turned on her seemed a little bit not believable, like, fully unprofessional to – like, look, I'm not a police officer, and I don't know what they go through in an IA investigation, but that seemed to be completely out of line with any sort of believable protocol or process or whatever. I did not suspect at first that her union rep was an Xer, although later that becomes clear. I guess what I think is the conspiracy is too vast and deep too quickly. Like, the New York City Police Department is fully infiltrated with Xers who are controlled by a community college professor. Like, that part is hard for me to swallow. Like, it's a community college, right? It's not Harvard, or even if it was, or Columbia or whatever. It's not like a huge institution that has, like, a lot of, it's the community college where they work. And I don't mean to slam community college, but I mean, like, how connected could this guy really be that he has full sway over multiple people in the NYPD, including internal affairs, right? Like, that part is a little too much for me.
Yeah, and I agree. And it's funny because just last week I was praising the fact that I found Simon to be a more intriguing villain than the Major.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I thought that was being done so well.
Yeah.
And now, you know what it's turning into? With this episode, it just turned into the following. Because anybody apparently can be an Xer now.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. Anybody can be an Xer. I continue to believe that, you know, we've talked in the past about their home. They've been home for like 6 months. It's New York City. It's 11 million people who have a lot of shit going on who are famously like jaded and skeptical, and like the amount of Xers around is always a little surprising to me. But you're right. And at this point, any single police officer could be an Xer. Any single person ever could be an Xer. It's a bit like the following. I don't understand how Simon became their leader. I mean, I agree with you. He seemed like he was unassuming. He was intelligent. He had ideas. But now he's like the head of this vast conspiracy that NYPD internal affairs take their orders from him. And he can order a killing. He can order the killing of Michaela. And 5 minutes later, it's being like, you know, it's going to be apparently conducted on police property. It was, yeah, I find that part a little, you know, I can be okay with like this, the tables being turned on Michaela a little bit. But it was a little too heavy-handed. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Jared. So Jared saves her life. I think Jared has outed himself as being unwilling to see Michaela come to harm. Whether or not Jared's really an Xer, I mean, I think you and I both believe that he's not in any way an Xer and that he's undercover.
Right.
As much as he's angry. And I think it is time for Jared to take Michaela into his confidence. I think the show would be better.
Absolutely.
I mean, you pointed out
that's
last week.
That's the whole problem.
Yes. Although you pointed out last week that she has been demonstrated to be completely incompetent at going undercover, and Jared would be stupid to tell her. At this point, he has to tell her, right?
Yeah. I mean, all this, it's, the whole thing has become too convoluted. And, you know, last week it ended with, okay, is the captain an extra, you know, was it, we have a problem, Michaela figured out this undercover situation is a problem, or, oh no, we're Xers, and even this week, still convoluted, like, stop with the, is he, isn't he, and just tell us, the viewers, because it's a gimmick now, and it's an overdone gimmick, you know, and I mean, I'm also thinking, okay, is Jared undercover, and the captain's an Xer, and he's fooling all of them, like, what the hell?
Right, yeah, how did he know the captain was an ex? So is he not officially undercover? Is he just personally undercover?
It's all too convoluted and needs to come to a head, because now it's cartoonish and comical now. It's just not believable in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like this storyline is getting too convoluted at the same time that the callings are becoming very convoluted. And I think it would be better if one storyline was more streamlined and grounding of the show, because we also had the callings take on a completely new level of hallucination and insanity and mythology. And also Sanvi's storyline has gone bonkers, right? And like, I mean, it's not that crazy, but the callings have gotten so crazy that maybe it would be good if the police and the conspiracy side, and if one side of it could be a little more, I don't know, grounded right now.
Grounded, yeah.
Right? I mean, I felt like the calling storyline had too much going on also.
I felt like the other two storylines were better. I mean, the Sanvi storyline, I was thrilled that Zeke was like, are you on something? Yes, she's on stupidity. But I'm glad that's kind
I'm
of
thrilled
their
with the prospect. I'm thrilled with the idea that she might die and be off the show soon.
You know what I think is going to happen? I think whatever Alex is doing to kind of bring her down and get her straight is going to have an adverse effect of what Sanvi did to herself to get rid of the callings, and I think it's going to bring her
calling
back. Like, I think
her genetic anomaly will return.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen there, because otherwise Sanvi's pointless now. I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, we've talked about this. There's been a lot of doctors throughout history that have believed in something and then tested on themselves, some successfully, some not so successfully. So it's not, you know, too far outside the stretch of the imagination that Sanvi would do that. But because we have so much history of this happening, you'd think that Sanvi would know that and know this is a bad idea. You know, it's just the way it was done was poor. And I'm glad that's getting resolved. The
zombie has
the
made.
Calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the zombie's made some kind of really inexplicable decisions in recent weeks. I think that experimenting on herself is, yes, it's been done a lot through history. I'm not aware of it. Like, I don't know personally of any stories in like recent modern history of doctors doing that. I guess we don't hear about it because they either die or get fired in disgrace, and we rarely hear of anyone since, like, Louis Pasteur or whoever who injected himself, right? I agree with you. I thought it was really well done. I thought they did a good job of directing, like, writing and directing the whole scene where Zeke is visiting with her, and she's like, where's my journal? Oh, hi, Zeke, are you here? Where's my journal, right? Like, they did a good, like, it was a good scene of her being off kilter or whatever, and Zeke being like, yeah, maybe don't inject me with that after all. Right? Maybe I'll just take my chances with the magical frostbite at this point. But you're right. That's, you know, maybe she won't die. I felt like the whole, so from the calling side, the Elzura's prophecy, there's that, you know, at, it seems to indicate that maybe she won't make it, but you're probably right. They'll just like find a way to like restore her anomaly and she survives. But yeah, so that brings us to the calling, and you were going to say on the calling side of the story this week, which was crazy.
I thought it was pretty obvious from the jump that they were on a ship, because Grace was the clue. I was like, she's friggin' seasick, you know. And then as they read more,
yeah.
I was like, oh, they're taking on over traits of all these people, you know. I was like, they're all losing their mind, and you know, and I was like, it was kind of fun and everything. And poor Olive is like, what are you guys talking about? The storm? They're like, it's beautiful out. Look at my phone. You know, it's sunny in 69 or whatever the hell it was, you know?
Yeah.
And so I thought that was, you know, my first thought too was, wow, the callings have taken on a whole new meaning here. I was like, because the callings have been evolving lately, and they've been doing the callings a little differently, which I kind of like, you know, instead of just the same old, same old. But the last couple minutes of the episode, really, even with all the other crap that I couldn't stand in the episode, that the moment when they like hallucinated that they were on the ship and they see the plane in the sky, that brought me in. I was like, oh crap. So my first thought was, I don't know where it's going to go, but I feel like it's going to be some kind of Bermuda Triangle type scenario here. You know, you've got a plane from 2018 and a ship from the 1800s in the same place at the same time. Whether or not there's really something in the Bermuda Triangle, and, you know, despite all the stories and things people have said that have survived the Bermuda Triangle, you know, that was the first thing that came to mind, was that type of scenario, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah. I think it might have been too complicated to get there in this episode. Yes, the callings are taking a different dimension from last season when, you know, a person would have a calling and follow it, or Michaela really. Then it became like Michaela and Ben started to share callings. Now the whole Stone family seems to share callings. Now TJ's in their calling. Like, they weren't always, like, common callings. I mean, we did have, you know, in the earlier part of the season where random passengers were having, like, death date callings, right? And they are becoming more connected. This whole thing that Cal's like, it's all connected. It wasn't really all connected last season. It's now all connected. I guess this calling, which involved, like, prolonged hallucinations of the kind they've never had before. Like, they always sort of heard voices and seen stuff, but the idea that they felt like they were on a ship, they see things moving, they see the rain, like, this was a really intense one. What do you think about the part where they all were getting irritable and cranky? Like, Cal was being, like, a total jerk, and TJ was being very depressed, total jerk, and people were having, like, this, like, angry and depressed emotional thing going on, which the calling has not done before either, right?
Right. They were taking on the traits of the people on the ship.
Because they were so sad at being stuck on the ship or whatever.
That book, the book is a manifesto of, of what took place on that ship when they started having callings, you know. And then we find out that the plane and the ship were in the same place at the same time, so all these people, you know, so it is all connected. They, you know, they were all involved in that storm, which for whatever reason is doing the callings, you know. So it's like, you know, that whole timey-wimey part of it is coming into the show now. You know, so I was intrigued by that, though. When they showed that whole triangle aspect, I was like, ooh, that's kind of interesting.
I guess I might have appreciated just a little bit less spectacle getting there. I appreciated it also. The whole thing where they were in the same time at the same place somehow, the ship from many hundreds of years ago and the plane were in the, how did that happen? We don't know. Bermuda Triangle, good one. And it's a, you know, where does Zeke fit in here? You know, so the ship was lost for 10 years. The plane was lost for 5 years. Zeke was lost for 1 year.
A year.
1 year? 6 months? Something like that? So was
one
Zeke
year.
Also, is his cave part of the Bermuda Triangle? And what about the guy who drowned? He was only gone for like a week, right?
Right. Yeah.
So did he dive down into the Bermuda Triangle somewhere? Like, we don't know. That guy hasn't been, like, no one's really thought about him. We haven't really mentioned him since the end of his episode, but he had a death date, right?
Yeah. So somehow, okay, well, here's the thing. The writing on this show is not the best.
Right.
So I guess we'll have to wait and see how Zeke and the other guy fit into this shared experience from different times.
Yes. I also am interested to see, like, how Olive fits into all this. So I really felt like Olive's role this week was sort of like, well, I felt like Olive was sort of like when your friends take an acid trip and one person has to sit and be like the sober person to watch everyone. Like, I don't know.
The voice of reason.
Right? Like, always in college when people took acid, there was a person who would be like the non-acid babysitter to, like, sort of, you know.
That's
and
funny.
I felt like that Olive was sort of like, Olive was the voice of reason the whole time, and Olive is the one who figured out every step of the way. Olive's like, it's not raining. Oh, you're having a calling. Oh, you guys, oh, mom's seasick. Oh, this and that. Like, Olive, and I'm starting to feel more and more like Olive's role in this is also ordained. Like, we've been set up so hard this season that Olive's left out, and Olive was the outside, you know, Olive was such a part of it, and then Olive was the outsider and so angry and not experiencing it. And while she has no callings, she's so much of a part of it every time. And I feel like,
oh yeah.
And then we see the picture in the book with Ben carrying the woman and we think it's Olive. I think that Olive's meant to be all like Olive. So them getting on the plane was meant to be, but I feel like Olive not getting on the plane was meant to be. And she somehow has a role in this that no one understands yet. And that she's like sort of officially
I like
part
that.
Of it. In a sense, right?
Yeah, I agree with that, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, which I
absolutely.
Like because she's the best. She's the least annoying person on the whole show.
Yeah. Yes, she
but
is.
I think that she is meant to be like, I don't know, is she like the captain? Is she like there's someone in this book that she parallels that we don't really
probably.
Know or understand yet? Yeah.
Right.
So.
You know, it's funny.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
I should say. At the end, after the episode was over, Artie turns to me and says, he's like, you know, he's like, I kind of hope we never find out how any of it exactly happened. He goes, because too many times when you finally get answers, they're bad. And I said, oh, wait till we finally get around to watching Lost.
Oh, he hasn't seen Lost yet. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Me, him, and Alyssa have started, made an attempt a couple times, and we didn't get that far.
Yeah.
So.
But I mean, he's right? I don't necessarily really care. I like the whole Bermuda Triangle thing and all this, but I don't really need to have a full explanation.
Right.
But I do. So, little throwaway idea. I was reading something online today. I did not notice, but this guy who wrote the book is named Al Zuras. They're reading Al Zuras's journal. And a bunch of people online have mentioned that it anagrams to Lazarus.
Really?
Who is the man who Jesus brought back from the dead in the Bible, right? And it probably doesn't maybe mean anything. It might just be a fun thing that the show is doing with it. Because it's not, I don't think it's based on a real book or a real person. It's just anagrams to Lazarus. But, you know, given that they all, I mean... It's funny because everyone on the show was like, the 828s, they came back from the dead, but they really didn't. They were never dead.
Right.
Which, you know, raises the point of the death date. Like this idea that you only, however long you were gone, that's how long you have to live. But they never actually died, right? They were never dead.
Right.
To them, they just blooped for 1 second and came back.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it really means. Like, Lazarus came back from the dead, but they were never really dead. So we'll see. Actually, that makes me think real quick before we wrap this up. Solomon the Professor, who controls the entire police department and a vast network of murderers and spies, he made this remark about, so you know how Ben is the worst. Ben, so you believe that you're the center of a vast conspiracy and the government's after you, and you don't lock the closet where you keep all your secret files so that random visitors can just walk in there and photograph it, right? Which is what happened. So this week, Simon's looking through his photographs of Ben's closet, and he makes some remark to Jared?
Yeah, it was Jared.
About how the 828ers are controlling the future. Like, they can see the future, and they're controlling the future. And, I mean, he has fully misunderstood what's going on here. I mean, do they see the future? Maybe. They get flashes of, I mean, I don't know that I would say the calling is seeing the future. I think the calling is like a little flash of something that is happening right now or that could happen, but I wouldn't characterize it as they can see the future. And I think Simon has vastly overstated what's going on. He doesn't know, right? He's vastly misunderstood what's going on and what his fear is, because he actually goes on to say they're controlling the future, which is fully untrue.
Right. It's based in fear, which is how things get out of hand because of fear. I mean, look at history.
Yes.
Fear has dominated
coronavirus.
Every bad thing. Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm going to digress for a second. So, on Twitter today, some people, you know, they were like, saying stuff like, "Oh, this is just like The Stand, and we're all gonna die." And so Stephen King pipes in and is like, "This is not like The Stand. This is not the scale that The Stand was on. People just, need to take necessary precautions and everybody will be fine, right?" So the next person says, How the hell do you know? Have you even read the book?" I really hope that person was just trolling.
Stephen King.
I really hope that person was a troll.
Oh, wow. God. That's hilarious. Trying to school Stephen King. Wow. That's hilarious.
So.
Oh, boy.
It was actually, the ironic thing is when Alyssa showed me that today, earlier today I had made a joke about this is the beginning of Captain Trips. We were talking about something at work today, and I mentioned Captain Trips, and then she shows me that Twitter post.
Yeah, people are getting crazy.
Crazy.
Luckily, we don't have to be together for Fandom Access. We are in a room virtually doing this podcast, so we have no.
If we're done with Manifest, I do have one quick show that I wanted to not really discuss, but to mention to you. You liked Game of Thrones. You liked Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You need to go
on
Netflix.
Up until the end, yeah.
Yeah, well, I just binged 3 seasons of The Last Kingdom in about a week. Alyssa had already watched it, and she was telling me something about it, and she's like, "I wouldn't mind watching it again. It was so good." You know, I was like, it's not often that she gets this amped up about a TV show. So I was like, "All right, I'll check it out." It is good. And it's funny because I was reading something online that was, about it that said The Last Kingdom, it's like Game of Thrones, but real.
Alyssa had been enjoying it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's historical fiction. So they do take liberties, obviously. But the show it's really, really well written. It's probably right up your alley. So if you're ever looking for something to watch, you should definitely check out The Last Kingdom.
Okay. All right.
There's 3 seasons. Season 1 and 2 have 8 episodes. Season 3 has 10. And then season 4 should be is coming. They haven't set a release date yet, but it'll be out in the next probably 4 or 5 months. So, but it's really
all
good.
All right.
It is really
okay.
good.
Okay.
So.
All right. Great. I mean, that's going to fall down on the list because I need to complete my rewatch of Westworld this week before it premieres this Sunday.
That's only, what, 16 episodes?
No, well, no, I'm into season 2. I only have, like, 8 episodes to watch.
Okay. You got plenty of time.
Yeah. But
yeah,
we'll be back. So
to,
next week, that'll be on the list.
Yep, that'll be on the list. I was trying to get Artie to binge it. But he's like, I'm still watching Continuum.
Yeah. He'll have to watch it later.
Yeah, because I was thinking if he got it done in time, we could watch it together, but that's not going to happen. So, because
yeah.
this season of Westworld looks, you know, it's like we're all hyped for Westworld. The previews looked amazing, and this season's going to suck or something.
Yeah. We saw all the best spots in the trailer. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's another
right.
week of Fandom Access put to bed.
Okay. So we're back next week.
We'll do it
these
again.
Same two shows
back
in Westworld.
Yeah. Another show.
Okay.
All right. Well, have a good
all
week,
right,
Karen.
Great.
And I will.
All right.
You
too.
Later.
Have a good week. Take care. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All right. Bye bye.
Good night.